Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in on Tuesday. Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, 80s action star Colton Stone. Andrew Anderson will try and stay awake the next 2 hours. Great to have you. Hopefully warmer weather is around the corner. Just in time for you to come see us at Longwells Thursday and Friday for the madness that will be so much fun with the NCAA tournament. Want to see you at Longwells. Want to see you log on ESPNLincoln.com. Get a bracket filled out. Win that Lazari's $100 gift card. All the prizes and goodies galore. I have my bracket right here. I just need a lighter from Colton. Okay. I will unveil this probably tomorrow like you care, not step by step. It'll be streamlined and painless, I promise. Spring football gets rolling on Friday, and then it's spring break for Nebraska, and then they'll be back the following week. Scott Frost, his press conference tomorrow, a chance to meet some of the assistants, a few players, so excited about that. But some thoughts on Frost and this Nebraska team moving forward. We'll get and hear from Tim Miles as Nebraska has taken a step forward. They have moved forward beyond the NIT and NCAA disappointment. Will that be on display tomorrow night on ESPN2 at 8 o'clock? Don't know, but they are off to Starkville. We'll spend some time with that. Mitch Sherman coming up. Rick Pizzo on the way. And then a special guest in studio, Armed and Dangerous quarterback guru, Armed and Dangerous Quarterback Academy, Steve Calhoun's in town for Pro Day tomorrow. He's worked with Tanner Lee exclusively and extensively, but also Coach Calhoun, no stranger to Patrick O'Brien, Tristan Jebbia. So he'll kind of set the table for us with both the quarterbacks in the race for quarterback at Nebraska this spring and beyond. Coach Calhoun in about an hour. Can tap the line, Chilling Bridge, Cork and Tap House lets you do that. 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Ways to get a hold of us on Twitter at Hail Varsity, at Schmidt underscore radio, or can email us, chris@hailvarsity.com. Okay, so that's kind of the lineup. That's the situation. I'm really fired up for spring ball. I think you are too. And I think you're fired up because of several reasons. I mean, it's the Scott Frost factor, the Frost factor. It's good feelings. It's fresh. It's new. There's past success. There's recent success with Scott Frost and where he's been. And the element of understanding, right? Guy knows what Nebraska football's all about. Guy understands how Nebraska football has won. He knows the Nebraska blueprint. And Brandon Vogel just absolutely annihilated a column, a story, on HailVarsity.com. Just tweeted it out there. And that's where I want to start today before we get into some guys to watch in spring. Where's Nebraska football been the last 15 or 20 years? And it's been good, but not great. And then when it's been bad, it's been awful. There's kind of your spectrum. And I declare bad and awful as 5-7 or worse. There's been some puncher's chance seasons in there, where you had a year with Callahan where you're 8-4 and you beat Michigan and you whacked Colorado and you were right there and you didn't get blown out really by anybody. You have a year with Pelini specifically, that 2010 season that, man, there was so much promise and got hosed at A&M and it kind of fell apart. You lost a lead to Oklahoma. Really, you had a couple of teams, not quite a Cinderella because you had Ndamukong Suh, but you had a Cinderella element to you in 2009 because of how inconsistent and inefficient your offense was. You weren't scoring a lot of points. That was okay. You had an NFL defense. They get 3 or 7, no biggie. We'll find a way to get 10. Okay, so you had some years that Pelini had some teams. His first year were really good, but it just never got a championship, although they knocked on the door, and they were there 2 out of 3 times to be competitive and almost win it. You know what happened against Wisconsin. They had Solich, who inherited a lot and won a lot and then was not here. So what do you have with Scott Frost? How is he similar? Is he similar to any of the – and then Mike Riley, nice guy, was going to get fired at Oregon State, grandfatherly, and how did he kind of run a locker room? Well, do you ever go to a grandparent's house or do you ever go to like a neighbor lady? I had a neighbor lady named Marge. She was awesome. She didn't pay real well when it came to mowing her yard, but I always got a Pudding Pop, vitamin D milk, and candy. Werther's. Shocker, I know. Well, Riley was all about sprinkles and Werther's. Let's take kids to the arena. Let's go see a concert. Let's have some fun. They'll work hard for me if we have some fun. Well, it's going on spring break with your parents' credit card. Fun. And no one ever screamed about the bill. That's how that thing went. Here comes Frost. Why is it going to be different? Why is it going to be different? Fair question. Interesting topic. I think if you poll Nebraska fans, 9 out of 10, I can't go 10 out of 10, are so bought in that it'll be different because of how competitive Scott Frost is, and Vogel writes about that in his 100-day tribute to Frost and this program, where it's going. You have competitiveness, and then you have confidence. How many stories have you heard about Scott Frost? A lot. You've heard about Stanford, and you've heard about his time with Tampa, and you've heard about his time in Oregon, and you heard about what it was like for him to come back to Nebraska once he transferred back from Stanford. And I would go on the old sturdy ledge and say it was a little more than hazing. It was, bro, you thought you were too good for us. We are going to smoke you. And that's the type of treatment dude got. And he kept coming back and didn't go away. And then was pretty awesome at what he did. Play action, option, and then a very thick back running that option. And you know what happened in 1997 with him and Amon and that offensive line and that defense. Confidence and competitiveness are two reasons. If you pull Nebraska fans right now, 9 out of 10 will say, oh, Nebraska is going to get back to being what Nebraska is about. Brilliant write-up by Vogel. It's true. And I can't disagree with that. Why is it going to be different? Why is it different? Callahan, I'm too smart for the room. I'm an NFL guy. Riley, too nice. And Bo is a guy that had leads in games that you never, ever want to see or hear about again. Big stage, big moment, ABC, night, national games, you're ahead, Nebraska's ahead, Nebraska's come out ready, Nebraska's prepared. And then something goes wrong, and the old living room carpet goes up in fire, in flames. That breaking point moment, there was a point of no return. And I think you'll have something different because of the confidence. I don't want to say Bo isn't confident or wasn't confident. I think there was just something in him that said, man, something's bad. Something bad is going to happen, and I want to have an answer. Probably fear of failure. First big job. You know what Nebraska's about. But even to a degree, he's not from here. Frost knows it because he lived it as a player, and he went and he experienced it as a guy who came back after spurning the in-state school, right? So confidence and competitiveness, but how about understanding? How about understanding what it takes to win, why you win, and that's that hard work element that he preaches. It's rural principles. Family members and friends or you yourself who do just brutal work, God love you, on the land, or did as a kid, or whatever your case may be, the crops or the livestock aren't going anywhere. So they're there waiting for you. You better figure out a way to conquer them yet again and get back and ready to do it tomorrow. That is the thing that will get Nebraska back to winning at such a high level that you all want. Even if they never win another national championship again, they're going to go about it the way you're going to be proud of it. And because you got a guy in there now wearing the headset and calling the plays that gets it. So the dynamic here of football, how it shifted, how it's changed with the spread elements and the spacing and getting athletes in space and how nobody in the world aside from Alabama can tackle or Central Florida can tackle for that matter. Those are the next steps like on the field. Getting the tempo down, getting the offense down, getting the defense to be aggressive and get some turnovers, getting the offense to score some points and let the defense feel free, be ready to go. So that's the install, that's the work in progress that awaits Nebraska spring football. But just a good write-up by Vogel, that piqued my interest to start things out. And why it's going to be okay, why it's going to be different this time. Because it's about to be step one. You had step one with winter conditioning, but you're really going to have step one with spring ball to get the guys ready for summer and then obviously for fall. So some position groups you're interested in, how are they going to adapt? How are they going to shift? How will it shake out? And one of the reasons you can be confident that year one's going to be okay, or even if it's not any better than 6-7, 7-6, 500. One reason I think this team, and we say this every year, but again, the understanding part of it is a big game changer for me. Hey, Riley will be okay. Look, the guys won with less. Hey, look, there's Bo. He's been to Nebraska. His defenses are killer. Hey, there's Bill Callahan. He went to a Super Bowl. The offense will get big-time recruits in here. I'm guilty. For the last 15 years. Hey, Frank will be okay. It'll work out. Tom handed off to him. More so of a, I'm Steve Peterson and I'm your boss, so let's move on. I know I'm rehashing 20 years of stuff. Forgive me. But you have a difference and an opportunity right now in Frost with everyone's full support. And you have this offense that has done some great things. Can you get the talent here? Well, it needs to be a loaded spot at quarterback, right? Yeah, do you have that in that quarterback room? We'll talk to Steve Calhoun in 1 hour. What's Patrick O'Brien going to bring to the party this year? What's Tristan Jebbia got going? What's Adrian Martinez going to bring? Andrew Bunch. You have kind of your bridge guy in Noah Vedral that'll be here. Here's how it worked for us at Central Florida. I know I can't take a snap. Here's what you guys need to do. And you have two guys. You have a mature young guy that's the quarterback that Scott Frost wanted in Adrian. You've got the gym rat that learned and already had great maturity coming in when it came to studying film and knowing where to go with the football and process stuff in Jebbia. Then you got the guy that's been here. And Patrick O'Brien, that has seen some field experience and probably has your best dual threat ability when it comes to size and durability and the zone read game that he came from in high school. Not that Jebbia didn't run the football, he did. 400 to 500 yards his senior year. Thank you, father-in-law Al, for reminding me every time we see each other. And then there's Adrian, the freshman. I think Nebraska, because of past quarterback performance, where Scott Frost has been, is going to be able to be one of those teams in college football that win and take a step forward because of the quarterback grooming you're going to have. And it's been a long time since Nebraska's had great, 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 great quarterback play. You've had very, very good quarterback play. You had good quarterback play with Taylor Martinez in probably 7.5 to 8 out of 10 instances, okay? You've had great quarterback play from Eric Crouch. You had really, really good quarterback play in Zach Taylor. You had really good quarterback play in some instances by Tommy Armstrong. You had great quarterback play from Tommy Armstrong when it was time to bet the house on the other team because they're up 17 and it's overtime or a comeback win early in his career. But now you got Scott Frost with a guy that's not very stubborn when it comes to flexibility and adaptability to what he wants to do with his quarterbacks. And he's got a room full of dudes, and he's going to keep bringing more in. May the best man win. And let's have options as a backup. I like it. We'll talk some more spring football with Mitch Sherman. We'll get caught up with Steve Calhoun, Rick Pizzo coming up. A loaded Tuesday on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Colton Stone, 80s action star, is producing and engineering. Andrew Anderson is still awake. Welcome in Mitch Sherman with ESPN.com and Magazine. He is ready for the tournament. He's ready for Major League Baseball. And I know he's got Husker football on his mind. Mitch, how are you, sir?
I'm well. You make me sound like I'm very busy. So I guess I am. But, yeah, it's that time of year.
Are you guys on spring? You're not. You're never on break. But
nope.
Are you on spring break? The kids on spring break, or
I'm
next
going
week?
On spring break in a couple weeks. Okay. after the Omaha regional. Yeah, Mike, our spring break in Gretna is late. We're the 26th to the 30th, which works out well because we start off spring break with the Royals at Warner Park on the 26th, Monday night, and then we're gonna make a little getaway for a few days. But, so I do have a spring break, and I got to get through this Omaha Regional next weekend first, or I shouldn't say it like that. I get to experience this Omaha Regional. I mean, seriously, if Kansas and Michigan State and Duke and, you know, Team 4,
Auburn
is the seed, but I'm not putting Auburn there in my bracket. So I think I have New Mexico State, actually. I think it would be great for Omaha in the tournament if you have those three super heavyweights there, and the coaching lineup would be better than a Final Four with Izzo and Krzyzewski and Self. And then you have, like, the biggest Cinderella possible, like a 12 or a 13 seed as the fourth team there. I'm not super excited about Auburn with that other mix, but, you know, hey, if they get there, they earned it, and then we'll look forward to seeing them potentially play Kansas. So yeah, I'm rooting for Duke and Michigan State and Kansas unabashedly this weekend, because it will give us great stuff to see in Omaha and great stuff for me to write about next week.
That is a monster bracket. That is a wonderful region, the Midwest. It is a brutal region to get through and find your way to San Antonio, obviously. But, yeah, that is coming to Omaha in a couple of weeks. I've got a lot of Kansas fans asking me if I know anyone or got a guy that can get him seats. And I'm like, are you crazy? It's going to be Lawrence North. But, no, let's stay with the tournament here before we get into spring football. What did you think of the committee? What did you think of Rass and the gang with how they ultimately decided, and that includes Oklahoma, and that includes Arizona State, that excluded Nebraska?
Yeah, by the end of the whole thing, you know, after the Big Ten tournament ended early, of course, and then all of the different things sifted out around the bubble. When we talked a week ago, and that was before most of the major conference tournaments, you know, I told you that I thought Nebraska was out, and then the different things that happened throughout the week in some of the smaller tournaments, there were a couple of spots that were snatched away from major programs potentially, or mid-majors that were on the bubble. And that completely ended it. You know, where Nebraska's at in the NIT is another story. And to be honest, man, I know it's of importance to the Nebraska basketball program, but I don't particularly care about NIT seedings.
Many don't either until now.
Yeah, right. And I don't care about it now. I mean, I feel badly that they don't get a home game, and that they seem to have a very difficult road to New York. But by NIT standards, but it it doesn't register for me where you're seated in the NIT. I mean, in all honesty, the NIT doesn't really register for me. So, I know some good things can come out of it for Tim Miles' program over the next couple of weeks if they're able to keep winning. But you know, I'll watch if they get to New York. I guess I'm more interested in the big tournament, and I don't think that Nebraska got snubbed or disrespected by the NCAA selection committee. At the end, the bottom line was they had one win over a tournament team, and they didn't do what they needed to do when they went to New York. I mean, if you talk to those guys or listen to those guys talk before they went out to the Big Ten tournament, they said, "Hey, we've got it in front of us. We know we need to do some work, get something else done here." And they didn't. They went and they lost big to Michigan in game one. And that's just kind of the way that it fell. I mean, there was some revisionist history attempted after that, but they didn't, you know, through no fault of their own, they didn't get the chance to play Michigan State, Purdue, or Ohio State at home. And the Big Ten took some hits in the non-conference. So everything broke bad. I mean, Nebraska was looked at as a mid-major when you looked at its resume, despite playing in the Big Ten. It didn't have a Big Ten caliber resume, so it was an anomaly. I don't think you'll see it again anytime soon in the Big Ten. I don't think it's reason for Nebraska fans to panic about the future and say, hey, if we win 13 games, we're not even going to get in the tournament. I think in the future that will, but this was just not the year. It was terrible luck for Nebraska. It's kind of the story of Nebraska basketball and its history. Things just don't break their way, so... That's to me, it's the end of it, and they'll come back and next year, and hopefully be motivated by that, and hopefully not have much turnover on that roster. I hope to see all of those guys with eligibility back in Pinnacle Bank next season, and ready to make a run, and not just getting on the bubble, but being in a position in March where you don't even have to worry about the bubble. So, the rest of it with Rass. Bruce Rasmussen, the Creighton athletic director and committee chair, you know, I think they did what they were charged to do. There's another discussion to have about whether the selection process is correct and whether they should value the non-conference schedule as much as they do and put the same kind of weight on the November and December games as you do on February and early March. But that's what that's out of their hands. That's what has been. They've been charged to do. And I think they did the job that they had to do. And because of that, you saw some crazy stuff like Oklahoma, which hasn't won a game away from Norman in 2018, get in. And you saw the eighth place team in the Pac-12 and Arizona State get in. But they had great non-conference wins. And Oklahoma had a great start to the season. I mean, if this thing was seeded on January 1st, they might have been a one seed. Mm-hmm. So that's why they get in. And, in the end, all this bubble talk and all the excitement about who snuck in and who got just left out, you know, it's a drama. It's good drama, but I don't think it's going to impact the Final Four. I think the national champion is not going to be impacted or decided by who just barely got in the tournament or who barely got left out.
Mitch, you want to take it a step further and reveal the Mitch Sherman Final Four?
I knew you were going to ask me this, so I looked it up before I came on.
You don't remember?
I'm trained in your ways. I have two four seeds out of the western part of the country in Arizona and Gonzaga, and didn't do that intentionally. It just like the way those teams are playing. I think Arizona has got a fire lit under it after the story with Sean Miller and everything that they went through before the Pac-12 tournament. So they've channeled that in the right way, it seems. It could have worked the opposite, but they have done with that what their school hoped they would, and played well in Vegas, and I think they'll carry that into the NCAA tournament. And I like their draw, and I like Gonzaga and the matchup that they present against everybody. And then I picked Villanova and Duke out of the Midwest. Duke to beat Kansas in the regional final.
Okay, that's solid. That's solid. That's very, very well done. And there's no objections from me.
You'll be wrong, but you should object.
Well, but it sounds like a great idea right now, and that's where we're.
A few years ago, I picked 4 for 4, but that's once in all my years.
I know you
did.
I think you were on with us when you did that, and that was good. But that's the one we're going to always point back to. It's kind of like that November win. The committee
exactly.
took with them. Let's talk to some Nebraska football spring ball. I got about 2.5 minutes here, Mitch, and. When you look at Nebraska and Frost, and they'll have a quick get together Friday, spring break, and then they'll hit it hard after spring break. What one storyline are you most interested in with Nebraska this spring?
It's quarterback.
Yeah,
I mean it's easy. That's
same here.
Answer.
Same here.
But I mean, that's what I'm going to be watching. I don't know what they're going to have as far as access to watch the practices. If it's nothing, then. You know, that's what I would want to ask Scott Frost and Troy Walters about is, you know, everybody's wants to know about the freshman Adrian Martinez, and there's a lot of intrigue there because he's coming off the shoulder injury and he had the good, you know, pretty good showing in the Under Armour game, and you know you've heard him talk, and he just, you know, now he's just got to go play. Now he's just got to go be a great player because everything else fits into place for this storyline for him to be the guy that. That these coaches ride to greatness, and I'm not predicting that's going to happen, but I want to know how he fits in, and of course I want to know how Tristan Jebbia and Patrick O'Brien are functioning in this new offensive system. So really interested to see how that works out. You know, the running back spot is really interesting too because they brought in so many guys. You know, and a couple of them will be here for spring. To mix in with what was already a pretty deep group. So excited to see, this is the perfect coaching staff, the perfect offensive system to be able to feature just a ton of guys who can do different stuff from the running back spot and the wide receiver spot. And it's really, really interesting for me to think about what this offense is going to look like a year from now. And how all those pieces are going to go together, and just the different guys from the signing class, and some of the players that are left over. How J.D. Spielman is going to fit into this thing? It's really intriguing to think about the number of pieces that they're going to have, and how they're going to make this offense all go together.
You know, if all those pieces fit well together, it could be a little less time, and then Nebraska's back up to speed. But I think Nebraska fans are understanding too. It is. Transition and it is new, so it may take some time. But Coach Frost been adamant about how the build will be right versus fast. So I think that message has been loud and clear. Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com and magazine at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Mitch, we'll run you down next week and get caught up. Thanks for the time today, bud.
All right, thanks, Chris. Take care.
You too. Mitch Sherman with us with ESPN at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. You may have noticed that different soybean sign in your neighbor's fields. That's AgriGold. Customers now have access to select soybean varieties direct to their farm the AgriGold way. And they have high expectations for every seed that goes into the ground. And the approach to soybeans, no different. High-performance soybeans from a brand you already know. For more info, visit AgriGold.com. We'll talk some Husker hoops, thoughts from Tim Miles, and thoughts from Mr. Rasmussen next.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
You know, I just told him that, you know, I thought it was, you know, I don't have any answers of why. And I said, you know, I just think it's a slap in the face, you know. And I said, that's fine. That's everybody's prerogative. I guess if we can win at Mississippi State, you can win at Baylor, and then you can win at Louisville, then maybe we'll make the first four out for Joe Lenardi.
Keep trying. That is the goal. Tim Miles earlier today, anger as motivation as they head to Stark Vegas. Anyone been to Starkville on purpose? Andrew's like, no. And Colton's like, I'll travel a lot of spots, but I won't go there. Great to have you back with Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet, 20 minutes away. And then in studio, Steve Calhoun, Armed and Dangerous Quarterback Guru, Armed and Dangerous Quarterback Academy, working with Patrick O'Brien, Tristan Jebbia, Tanner Lee before the NFL draft. And the combine is done. You have pro day tomorrow with Tanner, so we'll get Steve's thoughts on Tanner's progression. I know we talked with Steve Calhoun last week from Indy, but there's been a week of work going on and one more chance to make an impression. Let's talk about Nebraska's impression to the committee. Nick Baugh caught up today with Bruce Rasmussen, and there were questions we all had, as if you're a Nebraska fan, you had these questions. If you're a guy that's watched Nebraska for a lot of years like me, you have questions. And what's gonna bury you or keep you afloat or get you in if you're Nebraska? And Rasmussen threw out, here's what they're not looking at, okay? Here's what does not help you. How you finish in conference doesn't matter, obviously, for Nebraska, for Oklahoma. How you did in your conference tournament. So the bar of soap in tube sock beating to the midsection, handed out by Michigan, didn't affect things. When you won or lost games, didn't matter. Again, Oklahoma v. Nebraska. The last 10, not something they look at. Recent performance is not a correlation to tournament success. That is still echoing in my ears. Did you win 8 out of 10? Did you storm through New York? Well, a team that limps in can shake the cobweb, stop being bored, get some chemistry, and put a run together in the tournament. Jimmy V. So what ultimately hurt Nebraska? Say it with me. One win against tournament teams or tournament caliber teams. Northwestern, not tournament caliber this year. Indiana, not tournament caliber. Wisconsin, not tournament caliber this year. A lot of 100 or worse RPI games of the 20 you played. The teams you took on in the non-conference, a lot of them were 100 or worse. And I'll give Coach Miles credit. They usually try and schedule top one or two non-Power 5 league squads. Now, where you can make a shift is if you feel like it, make that phone call to Wichita State. Make that phone call to Coach Smith in South Dakota. Make that phone call to South Dakota State. Make that phone call to San Diego State. Go Mountain West. Make that phone call to Gonzaga or St. Mary's. The other side of that is usually it's going to be tooth and nail for you. If you see Indiana twice, or you see Michigan twice, or as Nebraska had this year, you only had on-the-road cracks at Michigan State, Purdue, and Ohio State. So this is kind of a perfect storm of unluckiness. Mitch Sherman threw out the really good idea slash phrase of, well, this kind of represented Nebraska basketball this season, all of Nebraska basketball into this season. Some good, some bad. The hopes were up. Disrespect and the slap in the face narrative that is out there. Nebraska was unlucky with the Big Ten schedule. Nebraska was unlucky that Minnesota, Maryland, Penn State, Indiana, Wisconsin counted minimally for their wins. So what we were saying is this buildup happened. It's something that hadn't happened, right? You don't go win at Wisconsin. You don't go win at Rutgers. You don't go win at Minnesota, typically, as a Nebraska basketball team, or you're not used to seeing it as a Nebraska basketball fan. Every game counts, old or new, in the season. The thing that Rass said that sticks out to me, though, is Nebraska was in it till the end. And you just, part of the problem you had based on your seeding with the NIT was where you fell on the bubble line. Was Nebraska first four, first eight out? Probably not. But they weren't barely scratching the top 20. They were closer than that. They were in discussion till the very end. And it came down to how many tournament teams did you play? How many tournament teams did you beat? Let's go to the phones. We've got a couple minutes here before this segment ends. Sam, welcome into Hail Varsity. Sam, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
I don't know that Nebraska's going to be any better unless they do a better job of recruiting. I mean, he plays about seven players, and that's all, you know. He needs to have 10 or 12 that he can bring in.
Sam, I think their depth was fine, and I think their versatility was pretty good.
Well, I look at this guy over
where they need to get better, Sam, is their offense. They can't go on the road and shoot 40%.
No, you're right. But I look at Creighton. I mean, this guy at Creighton, I mean, God, he must do a wonderful job over there because he's always in.
He's always in. He's in a monster league that he has to compete in to get in. You're right. They are great at the three-point shot. Guess what they do? They get Omaha kids. They win with Omaha kids. They have that market cornered. Nebraska does not. And I have no answer for you on that.
Yeah, I know. I just think, you know, you're right. Yeah, maybe we should go and steal him then.
Borrow, Borrow.
Like we did before when Bill Byrne was here.
And he went
and got Connie Yoli.
So. Yeah, that was nice. Sam, you be good. Thanks for the call, bud.
Appreciate you. I got Michigan losing to Villanova in the finals. That's my final.
I like it, Sam. I got Michigan going pretty far, too, and that's not the boss's edict either. Promise you.
Okay.
Take care, man.
Have a good one.
Appreciate it. Good to hear from Sam. We'll take more of your calls here shortly. Hang on the line if you're there. Colton will get to you. Rick Pizzo's 15 minutes away. What's he think of the NIT and the NCAA middle finger? We'll hear Steve Calhoun in studio. Nebraska quarterbacks. That room is nice. Who can do what in the Frost offense? That's coming up next hour.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
I think it was tough at first. It was a heartbreak for us not to get in the tournament, but then to be a 5-seed was kind of like, man. But practice yesterday was really competitive, so that's a good sign that, you know, guys are going to go out there and give it their all. We feel like we can win the tournament.
Evan Taylor, your leader, your senior, off to Stark Vegas. A lot of slot machines, apparently, in Stark Vegas. Vegas says -4. Nebraska underdogged. Back with you to wind down hour one of Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Hope you're doing all right. Chris Schmidt with you. We were talking a little bit in Nebraska, what kept them out per Bruce Rasmussen, and where Nebraska goes. And we spent the first hour, part of this first hour anyway, talking Nebraska quarterbacks, competition, competitiveness, and then that quarterback grooming that makes, you know, the excitement pretty real if you're a Nebraska fan for spring ball and Scott Frost. Is there another position group you're predisposed with, preoccupied with? Man, and I think the safeties and I think the linebackers, and I need to see a pass rusher. You're wondering about left tackle. What about the offensive line? I mean, I'm not jumping over the two most important parts of the football team, the offensive and defensive line. Are you able to run the football? Can you stop the run? Can you get after the quarterback? It's been no's for a long time. Too long. But quarterback can raise you. Can absolutely raise what you are as an offense and give you a little confidence to be gamblers defensively and go get the football. No gamble with Rick and your friends at Sauter. Hey, man, when it comes to excellence, selection, beauty, and price. Sauter Heyman, Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds. Maybe you're on spring break. That's great. Time to go see Rick. You have time to do so. 12th and O, downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion, Lincoln around West in Grand Island. And pure-grown diamonds is something you should think about, should look at, birthday, anniversary, wedding, or just an I love you opportunity. Pure Grown Diamonds, 100% real diamonds grown in a lab. They're eco-friendly. They're 100% sustainable. They're 10 to 40% less than traditional earth mine diamonds. You can log on today, SauterHeyman.com. Colton, jump on here. Are you done with your bracket yet?
Done with multiple brackets, yeah.
How many you put in? How many online and how many, like, do you have any physical paper ones?
I'll do a paper one. Okay, that'll probably be more of my set one, but sure. I think I've done three online. One was kind of just like randomized it and just went for it.
How nuts did you go?
Not too many upsets. Last year.
As wide open as this season has been, a lack of dominance is fair to say.
Mm.
I still don't feel good about someone putting a crazy run together. I don't see a double digit seed doing it. Maybe Oklahoma. I don't know.
I think you get like one or two upsets in the first. I think South Dakota State has a good chance to win the first round.
I think Ohio State's garbage. I don't like how they play. They don't do much for me. So yes, I'm team Jack right now. The other team Jacks, right? I'm all over South Dakota State. I think the world is.
I think they get that one, and then other than that, I got burned on upsets last year, so I'm trying to stay a little low off of those.
Ah, okay. Rick Pizzo will have some brilliance on brackets, on Nebraska, on spring football. Steve Calhoun next hour. We're on the way. Hour two on the way with Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Into Hour 2, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. We welcome in Mr. Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Network, Big Ten Buffet Time. Can find and follow Rick on Twitter at BTN Rick Pizzo. Rick, how are you, sir? Great time of year.
It is the best week of the year. I'm just not sure that there are any two consecutive days better if you're a true sports fan than this coming Thursday and Friday, when you can lock yourself in from 11 a.m. Central Time till past 11 p.m. Central Time. Don't need to leave your couch, your stool, or whatever your preferred sitting spot happens to be on that afternoon.
You are so right, and excited to have you on today to talk Big Ten in the tournament, Big Ten in the NIT, and let's start with Nebraska, Rick. Your reaction to the NCAA's decision, your reaction to the NIT's seeding.
Well, the first NCAA decision, I was not surprised at all. I think, Chris, as soon as I saw Arizona State's name pop up, and they did it alphabetically with the at-larges, I knew that was bad news for Nebraska, because Arizona State did not have a strong conference record inside the Pac-12, but they had a fairly strong non-conference, and they beat some opponents who then went on to have really good years. And I think that was the message the committee sent this year. They didn't care about what you did in your league. They wanted to know how many teams you beat that they considered quality teams. And I could tell right away that that was bad news for the Huskers. And I will go back to this. I disagreed with my analyst yesterday. I told John Crispin I truly believed that Nebraska was one shot away from the NCAA tournament. And the response from both John and some of the other folks who replied to me on Twitter was, if we're a 5 seed in the NIT, how could we have been one shot away? Because one shot gets you a win over Kansas. And the only thing, in my estimation, that was truly holding Nebraska back from an NCAA bid was a quality non-conference win. It doesn't get much more quality than that. I think it was a little short-sighted. I did not like how the committee handled a lot of the seeding and a lot of the placement this year, totally getting rid of the recency bias, ignoring conference performance, but it seems that that was the change that they wanted to make this year, installing the quad one, quad two wins and getting rid of the last 10 or that momentum factor. I just particularly, in my humble opinion, don't like it.
I like the momentum factor. It's kind of what I'm used to. It's a good standby. How'd you do in your last 10? And Nebraska did really well in their last 10. I think for, and we, you and I have talked a lot about eye test, specifically at PBA. Nebraska's a tournament team. When they get out of the rail yard, though, they've looked like a bubble or an NIT team. And this team's this team's disappointed. They'll have to regroup tomorrow night and get ready for Mississippi State, who they've seen already. Rick, what's your take? And you know more about it than I do with how the Big Ten goes about their scheduling, because there were just a number of things out of Nebraska's hands. Seven tournament games this year is what it looked like, and only one after January, that Ohio State road game to follow up the Michigan win, and then you had to wait all the way to play a tournament-caliber team, says the committee, to the Big Ten championship contest. With the scheduling, Nebraska this year did not get home-and-homes with the Big Four. And how does the Big Ten try and fix that for Nebraska, or make sure it's not a deterrent to another team to get another league squad in, but also keep in mind that your big dogs, your Michigans, your Michigan States, your Purdue's, and Ohio State's, those aren't great areas for them either, because that's a losable game if you send them on the road.
Well, because it never is going to be equal with the unbalanced schedule and having an 18-game conference schedule but 14 teams in the league. It's going to vary year to year. There's no way that the Big Ten can predict in any given year which team may need the opportunity to play other top quality teams, because you can't predict which team that team would be, and you can't predict which teams would end up at the end of the year as top quality opposition. So this happened to be one of those years where Nebraska was able to pile up a ton of conference wins, but they only got Michigan State once, they only got Purdue once, they only got Ohio State once, all on the road. They only got Michigan once. That was their one home game against the rest of the top five, and they won by 20. You can make the argument both ways. The argument one side is that if you play those teams twice, you don't get to 13 wins in the Big Ten. The other argument is if you play those teams twice, you don't have to get to 13 wins in the Big Ten, because one win over a Michigan State or a Purdue qualifies or resonates more with the NCAA committee than three wins combined over teams that didn't sniff the NCAA tournament. They try to rotate it. The conference tries and does its best to make sure that that is done in equal ways. But again, they have no way to determine ahead of time, and those conference schedules are made years ahead of time. They have no way to determine which teams are going to qualify in the committee's mind as quality wins.
Rick Pizzo's with us, Big Ten Buffet, Hail Varsity Radio at BTN. Rick Pizzo, should Nebraska be more aggressive with their non-conference? You know how brutal strength of schedule was a year ago when they were 12-19, you know, without an Andrew White type player. This year, it wasn't as daunting, and it may have bit you, because again, you're back to seven opportunities. You go 1-6 against teams that are in the tournament. What's the right approach, in your opinion, for Nebraska scheduling non-conference wise?
But they did do that this year, Chris. Remember, they had Kansas and Creighton, and I think those games were either back-to-back or they were in the same week.
Yeah, they were back-to-back. They were that was a tough stretch.
I mean, I have no problem with what they did because you have to have enough games in your non-conference that are games you are going to win 99% of the time because you need to get to a certain number. I mean, if you're a fourth or fifth place Big Ten team this year specifically, you need to be at 20-22 wins or else you're not going to get consideration. Now, Nebraska got consideration because they piled up a bunch of wins, but they also had some quality non-conference competition in there. And next year they play in the Hall of Fame Classic, USC, Missouri, and Missouri State, I should say, and Texas Tech, I believe. Or the other three teams that are in there. So if you're playing Texas Tech, they're going to be a top 10, top 15 team next year in the non-conference. You're doing the right things. You can't load your schedule if you're Nebraska right now. You can't front load your schedule with non-conference games the way that Michigan State does. Number one, because you're not quite at that level. And number two, because to be able to schedule those games, you have to be able to attract the TV partners and need to be a big brand to do that. So I think it's unrealistic for folks to think that Nebraska needs to schedule five or six quality Power Five teams in the non-conference. You schedule two, maybe three, and I love the Creighton schedule because it keeps it local as well. I think they're really close to doing it the right way. I just think the way the Big Ten shook out this year did not do Nebraska any favor on Selection Sunday.
I think you're absolutely right with that. Rick Pizzo's with us, Big Ten Network, Big Ten Buffet, AL Varsity Radio. Rick, let's switch gears to the NCAA tournament. And I don't know if you're a Wednesday night guy, if you're a Monday morning guy with the Rick Pizzo bracket. Do you have one completed, sir?
No, I am a Thursday 10:59 a.m. guy. I mean, the first thing I do is I'll take all the number one seeds and move them into the second round. Then I'll usually do that with the number two seeds. And then from there, I do some deep analysis. I'm going to be dead honest with you. My son has beaten me 4 years in a row. He turns 11 next month. So this is put up or shut up time. I mean, if he's going to beat me 5 years in a row, I'm not so sure that I can legitimately walk into work every day and feel good about myself as a television broadcaster or a sportscaster, more to the point. So I need to put some quality work and research into this one.
Yeah, Rick, it's happened in our house too. I mean, just it's okay. Sometimes the young ones get a little lucky, and we can extend that to luck being a 4 year streak. Okay, I'm here
hey,
for
listen,
you.
If I'm going to lose to anybody, at least I lose to somebody in my own house.
Yeah, there you go. How do you feel about the Big Ten this year? Do you think Purdue could make a run? Do you like where Michigan's at, or are you a caution guy with teams that come into the tournament hot? Let's talk a little bit too about Michigan State. I mean, they get Detroit to start things off. How you feeling about the Big Ten's chances? It's a quality over a quantity situation this year with four teams.
It is all four top five seeds. I think three of the draws are pretty favorable. I think Michigan State's draw is pretty favorable. Obviously, you have to get Duke in the Sweet 16 if it plays out that way, and I know they would love to have that game as a revenge game earlier in the year. You would get Kansas in the Elite Eight for a chance to go to the Final Four. I mean, that's a tough bracket, but Michigan State gets to play its first two games in Detroit, and I think that gives them a little momentum. I really like Purdue's draw. I know a lot of folks believe that Texas Tech is a really dangerous three seed in that bracket. I think that Purdue matches up with everyone really well in that bracket, except for perhaps Villanova. And again, that wouldn't happen until the Elite Eight. I think Michigan, if they could get past North Carolina, gets a great draw because I don't think this is a classically good Gonzaga team. And I think Xavier is clearly the weakest number one. So I really like Michigan's draw. And so folks would say, well, Ohio State's in that same region. Do you like Ohio State's draw? I think that's a lot tougher because I think South Dakota State is probably the most underseeded 12 seed in the field. They are a really good team. I think they're only a 12 because of the league that they come out of. When I watch them play, especially Mike Dom, who's a future pro, I think 10 seed, 9 seed maybe at the worst. Ohio State's going to be tested in round number one.
Are you buying or selling Virginia this year?
I think I have to buy because of what they've done against some quality competition. I mean, you saw North Carolina beat Duke, and then Virginia takes care of business the very next night. I mean, they can win by not shooting the ball very well because their defense is so good. And when they shoot the ball really well, they're difficult to defend. They're difficult to beat. I've seen almost no one's bracket, none of the experts, have Virginia in the Final Four. I'm not sure why, as the top overall seed. I know Kentucky's in that bracket, and Kentucky is certainly a scary, a five seed, I believe, as well. But I think that Virginia is not getting the love, and Tony Bennett not getting the respect that his team absolutely deserves.
I've got Arizona coming out of there. I know there's swirling.
Yeah, Arizona's dangerous as well. They're the four seed there, right?
Yeah, I mean, that bracket, that South
the
region.
Scary four.
Yeah, that South region for Virginia is Creighton, Kentucky or Arizona, Tennessee, Texas, Cincinnati. I mean, it's brutal. Good luck being the number one seed overall. That's your draw.
Yeah, it's tough. It is a tough draw. There's no doubt about it. I'm just saying I don't think Virginia as a team gets the respect they deserve because of the style they play. I think the same thing applied to Wisconsin until they made back-to-back Final Fours.
Did you have a problem with Oklahoma and Arizona State?
I had an issue with both those teams, yeah. I actually went back and did a lot of both analytical research and went back to the eye test on the few times that I saw those teams. I thought both USC and St. Mary's deserved to be in more than either one of those teams. I actually think Syracuse was the team that got in that I think deserved to get in the least, and I say that having a degree from Syracuse and paying a lot of student loans to that university. I just think that there was a little bit too much credit given, I think, to the ACC. The fact that Notre Dame was considered one of the first four out when you looked at that team, and I know they had injuries. I think the ACC got a little bit too much love conference-wide from the committee, and I just didn't understand. If you watch St. Mary's play this year, St. Mary's is a team that I know they didn't have a lot of competition to play outside of Gonzaga in their own league. They would have handled business very well in basically every conference in the country. So I did think that those teams deserve to be in more than Arizona State, maybe more than Oklahoma, certainly more than Syracuse.
Let's switch to football before we say goodbye. Rick Pizzo with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Big Ten Network at BTN. Rick Pizzo. Rick, spring football will start Friday for Nebraska, then it's spring break, and then the grind really, really kind of kicks off. It's consecutive practices with Coach Frost. What's one or two areas you're kind of piqued interest-wise for Nebraska this spring? Is it quarterback play? Is it going to be the offensive install, just, you know, Frost first go with these guys? I mean, what are you interested most in seeing with Nebraska?
I think it's a matter of fit versus style. We know the style that he wants to play. How does Nebraska fit, and which quarterback fits that system? I mean, do you just go ahead and put your top recruit out of California and say, Martinez, you're the guy that can kind of run this offense in the fall the best, and no matter who's here on campus right now, no matter who's seen more snaps, that's the guy that I'm going to want. Obviously, we might not see everything that we need to see from the quarterback position and from the offensive install, probably by design in the spring. You don't want to unload everything that you have on these guys because, number one, they probably aren't ready to understand it with a fairly seismic shift. But more to the point, you want to be able to get it to the point where it is installable and understandable before opening weekend in the fall. I don't think you can do that in the spring. So I certainly think the style versus fit offensively and where the quarterback fits in is fascinating. But I also think defense is really intriguing because anytime you have an offensive mind come in to a program which historically has had a defense that has been able to help win championships as much, if not more, than the offense. Now, I know that's not recently, but certainly historically with the black shirts, and you have a guy who cut his teeth as a player and as a coach offensively. What does that mean for the defense? Does the defense become an entirely different look? Bend, but hopefully don't break. A defense that is smaller than it's been in the past, because you're going to be on the field more often with the offense going all the time and you have to have those quick changes. So I understand why the focus is going to be on offense, but I don't think you can overlook when you change to that style and that high tempo of offense, how it affects the defense and how the defense looks different from those of previous seasons.
Good stuff from Rick Pizzo. Rick, enjoy the tourney, brother. We'll be in touch with you.
Trust me, enjoy the tourney. I will, my friend. You as well.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back to it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. I'm just really smiling here. Great time of year. Of course, NCAA tournament going on. We're at Longwells Thursday and Friday. Log on to ESPNLincoln.com. Get your bracket filled out. A different sport, but a big time of year. In March, NFL Combine over. Now, Pro Day is going to be going for Nebraska tomorrow. And a man working with Tanner Lee and other quarterbacks at major programs. He's in studio. Yeah, that's right. He's not wearing a coat because, well, he's not outside. Steve Calhoun, Armed and Dangerous Quarterback Academy, armedanddangerous.com. Steve, it is so good to see you again. Last time we had a chance to connect, Nebraska won a thriller in that Big Ten championship game run against Penn State, cold and blowing day.
Oh, yeah.
We talked to you quite a bit throughout the year. It's good to have you in studio. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's good to be here in Lincoln. It's good to be in studio and actually see where you're actually sitting and make all the magic happen. You know?
Magic is debatable, but you're very kind. Coach, we'll get into so much to talk about here with the Nebraska quarterbacks. We'll also obviously spend time on Tanner Lee and how things have been going with him, as he has a big day tomorrow.
Correct.
At Nebraska with Pro Day. But I want to start off, and our listeners have had a chance to hear you talk about NFL prospects, talk about Super Bowl champions that you've coached and groomed. But I want to know, how did Steve Calhoun start this? Give me the true Hollywood story of Steve Calhoun as a quarterbacks coach before we get into some Nebraska and Tanner Lee topics.
Absolutely. As I told you before, I played 9 years over in Germany in the GFL football league. Each country in Europe has their own football league, and the one in Germany is called the GFL. And after my eighth year, I'm home training with my strength and conditioning coach, and there was a high school quarterback in there that was training with me. So it was always important to me, after I would lift upper body, I would go out and throw so I don't lose my muscle memory of my throwing mechanics. And the grandfather of this high school quarterback, he saw me throwing and asked me, could I work with his grandson, you know, because he was a quarterback as well. So we did that the next 4 months. I ended up going back to Germany to play my last year, and the kid's name is Derek Shaw, that played at Oceanside High School. He went and played his junior year and ended up becoming the number one high school quarterback in the country. And from there, Coach Enright, who's his grandfather, Dick Enright, you know, coach for the Rams, he became my mentor and really pushed me and said, hey, this is your niche. This is something you should be doing full time. And my brother came up with the name Armed and Dangerous Football. You know, he says, hey, quarterbacks are armed, using their arms to throw, and they're dangerous with the football. And 13 years later, I'm sitting here in studio with Chris.
Steve Calhoun, Armed and Dangerous Quarterback Academy. That's awesome. And there is no downtime for you. You've been to Hawaii. You'll be in Michigan. You're in Lincoln. You're in Orange County.
Right.
You hit the East Coast. You'll hit Florida. You'll tour around. And what's the thing you harp on most with kids at the high school level, if there are one or two things that colleges, major programs are looking for? What is it? What are you teaching and grooming the high school kids so they can get that look-see at the college level and playing a big-time school?
The main thing I always talk to my quarterbacks about are footwork. It's their footwork and knowing their offense, knowing where everybody is on the field, you know, based on cover one, cover two, cover three, or cover four. Really knowing your offense, and your footwork ties into your accuracy, you know, because of your balance. So those are the two things I really stress to my quarterbacks around the country that I have the opportunity to work with, that should be their main focus.
So the footwork is good, the playbook, and what's your takeaway on high school playbooks and even college playbooks right now, the ones you've seen and the offensive coordinators in college you've worked with? Has there been a shift? Has there been a kind of a change to less is more, so to speak, when it comes to verbiage and terminology?
Correct. I think there's so many good athletes on the field now with so many spread concepts. You know, you can put four athletes on the field. So I think they're just trying to, you know, make the offense really simple so they can just get the ball to their athletes and allow them to make plays and not really be confused or be paralysis by analysis, mm-hmm. basically, is the term we use. Just let them play fast. And the quarterbacks are smart enough to still, you know, can put some complexities in there, you know, so they can still continue to prepare them for the college level. But you still want to just get the ball out, get it to your athletes, and score a lot of points.
Hey, that's the name of the game, points. And Coach Frost's offense down at Central Florida, we were talking about this last week with Brandon Vogel of Hale Varsity, where they were averaging, gosh, it might have been between 14 and 17 points the year before.
Wow.
In today's college, the year before, it's between 14 and 17 points. 2 years later, you're leading the nation. Central Florida was in offense at 50 a contest. In your opinion, what's the ceiling here for this Nebraska offense / Frost offense? I mean, how big time can it be? Can it get to where Central Florida's was at, or can it exceed it?
I think it can definitely get to where it's at. I think they're going to have to be a little bit patient. Maybe in 2 years it can get to where it's at. I think he has to get the right personnel that's going to be able to execute his offense like he did down at Central Florida. But once they get those pieces in, I mean, they do a great job of coaching it, and, you know, the offense is really dynamic, and they get that that quarterback in there that's going to make it all run, they're definitely going to be either equal to or definitely could surpass, just because of the type of athletes that Nebraska, the program and the history of the football, you know, the type of athletes you can get here with those being.
Steve Calhoun's with us, Armed and Dangerous Quarterback Academy, armedanddangerous.com, here working with Tanner Lee for Pro Day, working with a couple of his prospects from California, Patrick O'Brien, Tristan Jebbia. We'll get to that. Coach, kind enough to be in studio here on Hale Varsity Radio as he's in town for Pro Day, as Nebraska spring football also gets rolling here on Friday before the spring break hiatus. So I have heard and seen where Coach Frost has talked about the quarterback play, the term he used, work in progress, and that is absolutely fair based on the newness of the staff and the newness of the personnel. Threat of the run, very important in this offense. Processing info quickly, probably the number one trait, and Frost has made comments and highlighted instances, while at Oregon, while at Central Florida, where they're flexible with the quarterback's strengths, where
correct.
Do they have a runner? And if they have a runner, do they have a runner that is big enough to take hits? Do they have a runner that needs to get down? That type of setup, that type of system. Let's get into a couple of the quarterbacks here. One you know very well, Patrick O'Brien. The other you're working with, Tristan Jebbia. Both those guys, Adrian Martinez, and just a tremendous talent that's part of this recruiting class. And then Noah Vedral, a transfer in from Central Florida, is out this year. He'll help kind of streamline the offense since he's been in it. And then Andrew Bunch, also from Arizona, is part of that quarterback room. Tell me how O'Brien's kind of taken to this transition. Let's start with Patrick. You've worked with him since he's been in ninth grade. And then I'll ask you about Tristan here, how he's come along. But so far, so good with Patrick. How's this spring been for him?
Yeah, he's really excited. He's actually a lot more athletic than people give him credit for. He just never had the opportunity to really show it in Coach Riley's offense. But, you know, in high school, he ran an offense very similar that Coach Frost wants to run here in Nebraska. And, you know, he ran for over 700 yards his senior year. So he's really, you know, he's trimmed down, gotten in shape, eating better. So he's really going to have the opportunity to really show his athleticism as well as how well he can throw the ball.
You mentioned the trim down part. That's been a big emphasis with Coach Frost. Eating better, workouts, sleep. How did Patrick take to all that?
It was a little bit different, you know. He couldn't make the late night Little Caesars runs anymore, you know. But you know, he takes football very seriously, so it wasn't something hard to cut out. As far as if I need to eat better, eat more fish and chicken and vegetables to help me become the starter here at Nebraska and help them lead them to a Big Ten championship, then that's what he's willing to do.
Is he pretty confident with his fit in this offense? And what do you see his strengths being based on what you've seen from the Frost offense and what he asks the quarterback to do?
No, I think he's going to fit really well. I mean, the one thing, he can process information. just being with him over the last 5-6 years, you know, I take him through film. I take him on the board when he's home in California. Not only are we just on the field just doing, you know, footwork and throwing mechanics, but, you know, we definitely get into the mental part of it playing quarterback as well. But definitely he's going to be able to make all the throws. And, he has the background of the spread offense. And then the other thing is he has a couple of games from last year. So that that game experience is definitely going to help him, you know, push him, I think, a little bit in the lead just to kind of start things off.
What type of runner do you think Patrick could be in this offense? You've seen 8 carries. You've seen as many as 18 carries in the Central Florida offense. What's a number that could work for Patrick O'Brien offensively when it comes to either a called quarterback run or the improv ability to run if something's open?
I think he's right around. He can get you between 6 and 8 yards, you know. And for a play caller, to say on first down, we go, you know, zone read and we're reading the end and the defensive end crashes and he has to pull it. I think he can go out and get you 6 to 8 yards, and that makes it very favorable. Second and two, I'm a former offensive play caller. I love that play call because now we have an opportunity to take a shot, and if we don't get it on that second down, we could still, you know, run the ball on third and short to still keep the chains moving.
The opportunity to run tempo, that blur offense that you remember well from Oregon, seeing the Ducks as much as you have, does that excite Patrick, that type of tempo?
Absolutely, because, a big portion is on the quarterback to make sure that he's processing information that, you know, as far as the defense, you know, what sets they're in, the leverage of the safeties, the leverage of the outside linebackers, where they're going to go RPO or those type of things. That really excites him, you know, because it's all on him. He's kind of just like the point guard. He's the Steph Curry dishing the ball out. So that's exciting. That's an exciting position to be as a quarterback.
Steve Calhoun, Armed and Dangerous Quarterback Academy coach. Hang out for another segment. Is that cool?
Absolutely.
All right. Steve Calhoun is in studio working with Patrick O'Brien, Tristan Jebbia for Nebraska. And we'll get to Tanner Lee here in a minute. It is pro day tomorrow for Tanner. Coach Calhoun's been working with Tanner, getting him ready for his NFL opportunity. As a reminder, we are at Longwells Thursday, Friday this week as we get the NCAA tournament kicked off 9 to 11, a pre-tournament show, and then games from 11 to whenever you decide to mosey on out of Longwells in the rail yard. Want to see you there. Can also log on ESPN Lincoln to get it a part of our bracket contest. Lazari's, the great folks, can win a $100 gift card from them. A quick timeout, back with more on Hail Varsity Radio.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Few more minutes back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery, Armed and Dangerous Quarterback Academy, armedanddangerous.com. Steve Calhoun, quarterback guru and tutor, is still with us in studio. He did not find his way to the door. He's duct taped to the chair. We love having Steve on with us, of course, and in studio. Steve, we talked a lot about Patrick O'Brien and the quarterback race at Nebraska. Spring ball set to go. We'll get into what's next for Tanner Lee here with the NFL and the pro day here in a minute. But Tristan Jebbia, tell us about your history with Tristan, and let's kind of go along the same lines here. Fit in this offense that Frost likes to run, Tristan's chances, opportunity with this blur offense.
Absolutely. My history with Tristan goes back quite a while. I started working out Tristan the summer of the end of his sixth grade year, going into the seventh grade year. So, yeah, that actually makes me pretty old now that he's a
experienced.
He's a sophomore, going to be a redshirt freshman here at Nebraska. But I had the opportunity to start working with him his seventh grade year and his eighth grade year, and then into high school, Calabasas. So I'm very familiar with his strengths and his weaknesses. And he's going to, you know, he's super athletic. And for somebody who's a little bit thinner, he can really throw the ball, has a lot of velocity, so he can definitely make all the throws that Coach Frost is going to ask him to do.
Let's spend a little bit of time with some of Tristan's strengths in this offense. The big question by Nebraska fans, and you've known Nebraska fans with all your work with the Nebraska quarterbacks, there is a question about Tristan's running ability and durability with that. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I mean, I think he's going to be fine because he's a tough kid. Even though he's a little bit on the lighter side, he can definitely take some hits and get back up just because of his mentality. You know, he's not going to let somebody, just because he get a good shot on him, let him take him out of the game. He's going to come back. You know, he's played hurt before, you know, when he was in high school, taking some big shots up there. So, I mean, that's not going to be a problem with him playing Big Ten football.
He ran quite a bit might be an overstatement. He ran pretty efficiently. Is that fair to say at Calabasas?
Yes, he definitely did. He did run quite a bit. But, you know, the athletes that he had to get the ball out to, you know, from all the receivers, you know, some of those guys are here playing on his team with him. So, yeah, he did run the ball efficiently, and, you know, he can definitely do that within this offense.
What type of runs would he – were they more scrambles, or were there some design runs?
A little bit of both. He was definitely – if the pocket broke down, he was definitely able to extend plays, and he's a sneaky – fast. He's a sneaky fast. He'll get out there and start running away from some linebackers. And if you don't take the right angle, he can get you 15 and get out of bounds or definitely get down. So.
Last thought on Tristan. One thing that the gym rat label's been applied to him because of how much film he has studied. His processing ability, how would you rank that from quarterbacks you've worked with in the past or currently that you see? I mean, just his knowledge and understanding of offense and a concept.
He makes it a priority to make sure he knows everything, all the nuances of the offense, because he understands that's what's going to allow him to be successful. You know, I'm talking to Tanner about Tristan and the other quarterbacks in the Nebraska program. Tristan really was underneath, you know, that wing of Tanner and picking his brain and, okay, how you reading this play out and what are you looking for on this? So he's really a student of the game, and that's going to allow him to have success.
Last thought, do you know much on Adrian Martinez?
I do not. I haven't had a chance to see much film on him, but now that he's here, I'm definitely going to take an interest and start to, you know, look and see his strengths and his weaknesses and how he can help this program.
Steve Calhoun, Armed and Dangerous Quarterback Academy, armedanddangerous.com in the Lincoln, working with Tanner Lee. Pro Day NFL future for Tanner is what the hope is, and back from the combine. So, Coach, we talked with you and the progress and the impressions Tanner made at the combine. You've been here since Sunday working with Tanner, fine-tuning things for Pro Day tomorrow. How's the setup? How's the feel right now as you go in 24 hours away?
Yeah, it's actually going to be he's going to put on a show tomorrow. And that's, I mean, just him understanding the pressure, which he handles really well, which is not really pressure for him. But, you know, we dialed in the script since Sunday. We've gone through it with the wide receivers and running backs and tight ends that he's going to have running at his program, at his pro day. And he's really dialed in. You know, we did a mock pro day yesterday, and you know, he did not miss a throw. Every route was ran clean and crisp and at the right depth, and he really looked good. I'm excited to see him put a show on tomorrow.
Tell me about Tanner's personality. There's a question that was asked that was brought to you from the combine, and the personality. Tanner always seems pretty calm and cool.
He seems pretty calm and cool, but he is he's almost like the Incredible Hulk. You know, just from the outside, like, okay, God, you know, has that, you know.
It's chill.
Yeah, chill. Kind of like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo.
Uh-huh, right.
Got that little bit of look. But, yeah, he has the biggest chip on his shoulder. And when, you know, the more and more he, you know, watch TV and they talk about Darnold and, you know, Allen and Baker, he starts to grow and turn green. And, yeah, that's that monster inside of him. But he can definitely, you know, he's a really, really fiery quarterback. But he can definitely contain it, and you don't really get a chance to see all of that on the field because he's always trying to be that extension of the coach and stay calm and cool because the players are looking at him to lead them. And if he's frazzled and, you know, not contained, then they have a tendency to be like, oh, my God, you know, the world is, you know, the sky's falling type deal. So
he wants to – he's calm when others are not. That's kind of his thought process. But there's a – pretty hot fire, correct, with the competitive side?
Definitely. You know, he thinks that, you know, as he should, that he's the best thrower in this draft. There's no doubt about it. He's not going to come out and say it. I'll say it for him. I've got a chance to know him, and I got a chance to see all the other quarterbacks. But, you know, we work really hard on his footwork, which, you know, equates to accuracy. And, you know, he's always had the arm strength. And so now, you know, I think he checked every box. And, you know, there should be quite a few teams that are going to be interested in him and going to take him, you know, I think between the third and fifth round.
What pro, you've worked with pro teams as well. What pro teams do you think fit with him?
Well, I think that's a great question. Detroit, Indianapolis, Baltimore, Buffalo, because he has the arm strength to play in bad elements, whether it's the wind or the rain in some of those places. You know, not Detroit or Indianapolis because they play indoors, but he can definitely play outside in bad elements and really drive the football.
Did the Penn State game kind of wow some NFL folks, that weather, that rain, that wind?
They didn't talk to me about that game specifically, but
that's good film.
That's great film. That's great film for those East Coast teams that, or even, I can't say really Green Bay because they traded for another quarterback, but
right.
He can definitely play in those elements, and that would make him a attractive quarterback, you know, in that weather.
Steve Calhoun, Armed and Dangerous Quarterback Academy, armedanddangerous.com. Steve, you're off. You're headed up north here a little later today.
I am. I am headed out to Midland University, Fremont, Nebraska, to go work with their quarterbacks. Somebody who's known around Lincoln, Jeff Jamroff.
Yeah,
he's the head coach there, and I got a chance to know him while he was here in Lincoln. And he asked me to come out and work with his quarterbacks, and since it's only 45 to hour minute drive, so definitely.
Well, enjoy it, Coach. We'll get caught up here. Thanks for the time today in studio.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on Hail Varsity.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time on Tuesday. Good stuff with Steve Calhoun. Thanks to Coach for sitting in and hanging out. Good stuff from Rick Pizzo, Mitch Sherman. If you missed the podcast, can log on to HailVarsity.com or iTunes, or select portions will get uploaded to ESPN Lincoln, where you can also go and get your bracket filled out, your chance at plenty of prizes. We're down at Longwell's Thursday and Friday, 9 to 11, special morning show to get the tournament kicked off. We want to see you down at Longwell's Thursday and Friday this week to enjoy all the madness. You can enjoy Nebraska men's and women's basketball. Just got this note. Yeah, Nebraska's NIT game we'll have for you tomorrow night here on ESPN Lincoln. We'll have the women's game Saturday. So, yay. That rocks. It's big time. Good stuff. So happy with that. 466-3776-800-825-5865. Tomorrow on the show, Jake Muehlheisen, Mule, proud of Lincoln Southeast and part of the Husker Network. Jake's going to join us. I'm going to talk him into, they tip off at 8, pregame 7:45-ish, right? I'm going to see if I can get Jake to walk across and do the interviews while sitting at a slot machine in Stark Vegas. That is my hope. I'm not giving him a per diem. We'll talk to Jake Muehlheisen tomorrow. Going to get Brandon Vogel on. I can't implore you enough to read Vogue's story, HailVarsity.com, on Coach Frost. It's good stuff. It's good historical, but not overly historical look at the men that came before Frost and just how it's different this time. You feel and think it will be. It's kind of how I spent the first 15 minutes yapping this afternoon. Big thanks to Andrew Anderson for sitting in, because Colton and Danny Boy going to be on spring break. One of the two will likely be passed out at this time next week. And Colton Stone, the 80s action star, is still here, which is good. That's good. So, Colton, I got to ask you, man, you've covered a lot of women's games, and were you sweating the Nebraska women getting in last night?
No.
No?
I'd also
did they get hosed on a 10 seed?
No, I think that's about right.
They get Arizona State, right?
And I saw one, they might have been a 9. So between 8, 9, and 10, I think, is where they were going to fall, unless they won the tournament.
Is Maryland just a bad matchup for them?
Yeah, Maryland's just like one of the best programs ever. They're right up there with UConn. Okay. So it's just
kind of South Carolina, Duke, Maryland,
Baylor, UConn,
Baylor, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
Maryland, kind of all.
There's your 6 to 8,
yeah,
untouchables,
basically. And I'd like to say that at the beginning of the year, I was probably one of the only people that picked them to win maybe double digit games. I said they'd win 18 to 20, and
that's
ended up
insane.
With
and I'm going to let you beat your chest on that, because to go from 7 wins to a NCAA tournament, it doesn't happen. It's kind of like going from 0-12 to 14-0.
They had addition by subtraction. So.
Yes, they did. That's a very polite way of saying it. Very polite way of saying it.
I don't know if they get past Arizona State, but they'll put up a fight, I think.
You're going to be wearing all red. You're not going to do this Arizona State-Nebraska mesh. Okay. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 4. Thanks for tuning in. Check us out, hailvarsity.com. See ya.